Okay, here we go, guys. Okay, we begin now. Bezus Hashem, the new Masechta Sanhedrin, Beis Amud Aleph. If we go at the same pace as we went in the last Masechta Sota, we should finish this in about 3 years. So we should all have good health and be here to be at the ending for the Masechta as well. Okay, so we start off the big word Dine. Now, what this first Mishnah is a very long Mishnah. The Mishnah takes a whole page and goes on to the next page. Lots and lots. And we're going to begin with, we're going to see there's different types of courts. We're going to talk about different types of courts. And depending on the type of law that has to be dealt with, you'll be using a different type of court. So what this Mishnah basically is going to do is just list through all the possible cases that there are and to which type of court you need to have. And then after, it'll take us about maybe 2 days even to do the Mishnah. And then afterwards, the Gemara is going to ask, what's the source for this, etc., and to clarify things. So we start, we're going to start with the lowest number of court and then go to the highest number of court. So you start with the words Dine Mominus, monetary cases, Bishlosha, have to be brought before a case of three judges. Now we're going to see, the Gemara is later going to discuss, what does Dine Mominus mean? Because you're going to see something in the next line that's going to seem to be the same thing. So that's what it says. It usually means monetary cases, usually civil issues. Gemara is going to discuss when Gemara says monetary cases, we'll see exactly what this means. Is it a separate type of cases? Is it the next case? You'll see, the Gemara is going to ask, because the very next case also seems to be a monetary case as well. So therefore, the Gemara will be dealing with this unclarity. But right now, it just means in general, monetary cases, you bring it before a court of three judges. Xelos vechavolos, cases where there's robbery involved, or you're injuring someone else, is also bishlosha, is also done in front of a court of three. Okay? So, now, here is stealing, you see the commentary, robbery is used here as a general term referring to the unlawful taking of someone else's property. This includes seizing it, using an article entrusted to one's care. Let's say you're a shomer and you're supposed to watch it and you use it. So that's also like stealing, or denying having received it in an attempt to keep it. Somebody gives you something to watch, you say, I never got it. That's all various forms of stealing. In other words, it's not the simple case of you go into somebody's house and steal. You know, it can include all kinds of things. The next case is bodily injury that's inflicted by another person. And we know there's five types of payments. So that's all done in front of a court of three as well. Nezek v'chatzi nezek. In a case where you have to pay full damages or half damages. And we're going to list a whole bunch of cases in a minute. That's going to discuss you need a court of three. Okay, this is a case where your animal, your bull, gores someone else. Where we say the first three times you pay a half damage, and the fourth time you pay the full damage. So that's what it's talking about over there. The next case is talking about tashlumei kefel, payments of kefel. We have to pay twice as much. That's a case when you steal something without somebody knowing it. You steal in stealth, and the person is caught, he pays the double damage. Four and five is if you steal an animal, a sheep, or an ox, and you go and you sell it or you shecht it, you pay up to four or five times the amount. They are all done bishlosha in front of a court of three. Ha'ones v'hamafata, a person who rapes a woman or seduces a woman, v'hamotzi shemra, or a person defames a woman that she was not a virgin when he married her. This is all done in front of three judges. Over here, the issue is, what do we do with the fellow? And there's a fine of 50 shekels that is paid. And the same thing with Motzi Shemra. Now, the Motzi Shemra is an interesting case, because it's talking where the husband says when he married the woman, she was not a virgin when they consummated the marriage. Now, his claim would be that after she was betrothed to him, then she did things she wasn't supposed to do. She was a virgin before, but after she was betrothed. And then that would be a case where she could be put to death. But we find out that it's not true. Now that's going to be a problem we're going to see. Let's see, he says he claims that she had committed adultery after they were legally married with a kiddushin. They weren't living as husband and wife yet. And he produced a false witness to her adultery. Okay, whatever. He gets married to her. The next day he goes to court and says she wasn't a virgin. But it was turns out to be false. So he has to pay a hefty fine to the father, 100 shekels. He can get lashed as well. He can never divorce for the rest of his life. So that's...
Against her will.
What? Against her will. You're right. Right. So that's one way of understanding Motzi Shemra. He brings Rashi over here. He says Motzi Shemra is a more general sense. It refers to anyone who claims that his wife was not a virgin when their marriage was consummated, even if the claim is true. And that could be, just as wasn't a virgin. It's nothing to do with the fact that she was, he'd bring a witness that after they got engaged, before they got married. Now, what's the point here? The rabbis say that a woman who's a psula, her ksuva is 200 zuz in the event that the husband dies or divorces her. And that's recorded in the ksuva. Now, if the husband claims that when they got married, he found she wasn't a virgin, then she loses the... Let's say before they even got engaged, it turns out she wasn't a virgin. Then she loses that 200 zuz. So the Mishnah here teaches that a three-member court can hear this claim. So this has nothing to do with potential scenario for getting a death penalty or something. So that's...
This is like theft.
What?
This is like robbery.
This is... Well, it's monetary, not robbery, I would say. It's... So there's two ways of learning the case. Either the classic case where there was a false witness that she was not a virgin in between the engagement and the marriage, or that she wasn't a virgin at all. Anyway, this is all brought in front of a court of three. Divre Rabbi Meir. These are the words of Rabbi Meir. This was all of them. He Ones, Mefata, Motzi Shemra. He listed three cases: rape, seduction, and Motzi Shemra on the woman. This Rabbi Meir said this. However, v'chachamim amrim, the rabbis say, motzi shemra be'eshim u'shlosh. You need a court of 23. Now, why would you need 23 in a case of motzi shemra? So the answer is, now, mipnei sheyesh bo dinei nefashos. Because really, a motzi shemra case doubles as a capital offense case. As we understand, we'll see in a minute, we need a court of 23. If you want to ever have to prosecute someone for a death penalty, it cannot be done with less than a court of 23. So anything smaller than that, you can't do a death penalty. So now let's take a look over here. The Gemara will discuss this in greater detail, but you can understand clearly why they would say this. When the guy says the wife was not a virgin, if he has two witnesses to support that fact, and she had a relationship with somebody else after she was engaged to the man, she gets killed. So it's not only, it goes two ways here. In other words, the man makes a claim. Now, depending on, the claim's going to go one way or the other. Well, it really can go three ways. But first, he brings witnesses that say she had an affair with somebody else. If that's really true, she's going to get the death penalty. On the other hand, if we find out that they're liars, then the husband's going to get a financial fine, because he spread a lie about her, and all the fine that he has to pay, and he can never divorce her, blah, 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 all those other things. So so Rabbi Meir looked at it just from the financial side. He said three. Obviously, you understand why there's a lot of Gemara going to be discussing this. The Chachamim would seem to make more sense at first blush, because every case of Motzi, it now depends how you learn the case of Motzi Shemra, but here the Chachamim are arguing, say you need 23. If it's only a case of reducing the ksuva, you shouldn't need 23. So that's where you're going to see there's going to be issues over here. So it would seem, we'll have to see what this machlokas hinges on. Okay, moving on to the next point. Makos, if you want to give lashes to somebody, if he's transgressed any of the negative prohibitions that have an action, that would have to give lashes. Let's say there's two witnesses that tell us that the guy ate treif. And he was warned, etc., etc. If you want to lash a fellow, it's you need to have a court of three. Mishum Rabbi Shmuel Amru, but again, there's a machlokes on that as well. In the name of Rabbi Shmuel, they say, no, Be'esrim v'shlosh, you need 23. So you're going to see why Rabbi Shmuel says you need that. You know, there could be issues. Lashes is pretty close to dying, you know, because it's a certain type of death, not a full death. I mean, you know, none of us should ever go through it. 39 lashes, I think, would need a lengthy recovery for
it's
that.
It's really one lash away from death.
And it's one lash away from death, and it could be cases by accident the guy could die. So you could see, since it's that close to death, and it's not just a money issue here, so you could see why 23 would be needed, but you see there's a machlokas there.
Did they ever discuss why you have the number 23?
They're going to discuss that. It's going to be in the Gemara. Everyone's going to say where 23 comes from, what the source for that. That's going to all be in the Gemara. All be in the Gemara. Now, next point. What if you want to decide, you have to decide if a month has an extra day or not. So, as you want to make the new month and all that kind of stuff. So how many judges do you need for that? Iber HaChodesh Bishlosha. The fancy English word, I never understand this word. Intercalation of a day into the month is done by three numbers. You want to say it's an extra day. So the month is either 29 or 30. You want to add a day. Okay, we can skip all this stuff. This is all. But see, the month can't really, the synodic month, the exact time it takes for the moon to renew is 29 and a half days and some minutes, etc., etc. So, but you can't have a month that's 29 and a half days. It's got to be either 29 or 30. So now they have to decide, are you going to add a day or not? So sometimes they make it a 30-day month. So you need three judges for this, and the Gemara is going to talk about this at great length. Now, the other thing you intercalate is not the month, but the year. When you intercalate a year, that's when you decide that you have to add a 13th month to the year. Because, again, you have to line up the solar and the lunar months. The Torah is both a lunar and a solar calendar. Now, the lunar calendar would be 354 days. If you take 29 and a half times 12, you get 354 days. Solar calendar is 365 days, so every day you're losing 11. That's why they just finished Ramadan now, right? Now, Ramadan started 11 days later because they only have a lunar calendar. So the thing is never going to be the same. It's always, over the course of 30 years, it'll move all the way back. So it can be at any time, and that's why they say that the Muslims are especially grumpy when Ramadan's in the summer, because they're fasting really much longer than if they were doing it in the winter. Okay, so that excuses all the murders, you see. That's why they're killing so many people. The religion of love and peace, you know, they're fasting. Yes, they can fast for 30 days. You think Yiddishkeit was a strict religion. Anyway, but Yiddishkeit says that the lunar month has to be in line with the lunar year has to be in line with the solar year, that we have Pesach in the spring and Sukkot in the fall and all these other things. So therefore, how are you going to determine, you have to have a court to decide when to do this. And there are signs that you have to see in order to do that. So now, it's a process. It's not like a one-shot deal, as we'll see. Iber Hashana, intercalating the year, Bishlosha, needs three judges. Divrei Rabbi Meir. These are the words of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, Shimon Gamliel says, no, this is a process, and there'll be additions as you go. First of all, he says three, and that's it, finished. But Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, no, it's a process. The process is as follows. Bishlosha Maschilim. First, they start three when they're going to even consider. You know, they take a look. The three guys go, okay, now they got to do this. Now, when are they going to do this, guys? They cannot do. Remember, the intercalation of the year is to add an Ador. All right? So now, you can't discuss this issue, let's say now. Let's say right now, in the middle of July, the Bezdin would like to know if next year we're going to add an Ador. So it's not even up to discussion now. It's way too early to decide these kinds of things. Okay? So they got to wait till well in, and that's why you can't even begin to discuss it until after the month of Tishrei. That's why when you have a leap year is coming, right? When you say the words L'chaparas Pasha, you don't remember in the Rosh Chodesh davening, when we have that Yihiratzon, we say for this L'tov, L'sim, L'tov, and then if you add the words L'chaparas Pasha, to atone for sins, we only do it for 6 months in that leap year, because that's the only time we could have decided if it's going to be a leap year.
From after Tishrei
till through Ador, and that's it. And then we don't do more than that. Anyway, so first of all, so step one is three judges get together and say, okay, is there going to be an issue this year of a leap year or not? So you sit down with three, and they may say, no, it's like, you know, we're not going to discuss it this year. Now, they're not going to really discuss it probably till Shvat, till probably like February. Because you see there's climactic and geographic signs they're looking for. They're looking, are the roads very sloppy? Have certain crops come up? Those things you can't know until you're coming much closer to the end of the year. It's not like we are lucky. We got a count set in advance. You already know 10 years in advance if it's going to be a leap year or not. They didn't have that. They went month by month by month. They're going along. They have no idea if it's a leap year or not. So they, whenever we'll see, they make that first sitting to decide, okay, are we going to, is this an issue to discuss or not? They're going to have three judges, and they're going to say, either they're going to say, oh, nothing to talk about this year because everything's looking fine. It looks like this Pesach's coming in fine and the roads are nice. So that's for three is for the initial discussion. I say, no, it's not so clear yet. We might have to, we'll extend the discussion. So three is the initial discussion. Then ubachamisha, no simenosni. Now, if there's more to discuss, then you bring in two more judges and you have five. And then let's say, you know what? It looks like it could be, but we're still not sure. So then we have to make the final decision. Vegomrim b'shiva. And then when they have to make the final ruling, they need to have seven judges for that. However, what if, for whatever reason, they didn't have the seven judges or whatever, vim gamru, and if they finish it off, begimel with three, muberes, it's also valid, bidiyevit. So it's a machlokas. Reb Meir says you only need three. Reb Gamliel says the process 3, 5, 7, and even bidiyevit three would be good. Okay, next. See, there's a tudasa. Now, normally, that would be a good... I have no idea why the author of the Mishnayos and the one who said the Gemara made this so unwielding to make a Mishnah that's so long. Like, that would be plenty to chew on right there. You see, there's a tudasa. You could end the Mishnah, start Gemara, and we'd be very happy for a number of pages. For whatever reason, they just keep plowing on, figure, let's just get rid of the whole list while we're doing it. So moving on to another different area. Smichas zekeinim varifas egla bishlosha. When the smicha that's required by the elders, we'll talk about what that is, and the egla rufa that we just learned, the decapitation of the calf, is required of three judges. Now, of course, we did learn, even brought the whole Sanhedrin,
right.
But that was only for a certain aspect, not for the whole procedure. The final decapitation part, you only need three. Remember, we brought the whole Sanhedrin in the beginning part. Yeah. Remember, we have to measure, and we're trying to find out who the guilty party is. In the early stages, you bring the whole Sanhedrin down. But once they said, no, we couldn't figure out who it is, and we're now going to come to the actual decapitation, well, the whole point of bringing out the whole Sanhedrin was to make a big deal about it. And people would look and try to find out who the murderer was. Said, we can't find the murderer. It's finished. We don't know what it is. We tried. We exhausted everything. We're going to have to now go. So when the final ritual happens, that's when you have the three. What's this smicha business? So we're talking about a specific case. He says, judges of a Sanhedrin were required to lean on the head of a bull brought as a par helem dover. What's a par helem dover? So something that was hidden from the congregation. In other words, they all made a mistake in halacha. Whatever reason, the rabbis erred in judgment, and therefore people did things wrong because of that. So they brought a bull, and that would require smicha. Would require leaning your two hands on the bull. So this was a bull offering brought by the Sanhedrin for certain sins that the majority of the congregation transgressed due to a mistaken decision rendered by the court. So that needs three rabbis to do the leaning, it's saying. The smicha, the elders, they do it on behalf of the people. You need three at that event. And the decapitation of the animal also requires three. Divrei Rabbi Shimon. These are the words of Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, no. B'chamisha, he says you need 5. Okay, next. Ha-chalitza v'hamiyun. B'shlosha. If you want to do chalitza, if you do not want to do the mitzvah of yibum does not need a bezdin. You just have it around. You don't need a bezdin. It's yibum. Yibum is yibum. You don't need a bezdin to get married either, right?
Two
witnesses. Yeah, that's it. You don't need a bezdin. You make a wedding. You don't need a bezdin. Chalitza already. If when a man dies without children, the brother is required to marry the widow, and he does not want to. Now we have the chalitza. So for that chalitza, there has to be done in front of a bezdin of 3. And that's all that commentary is explaining, everything that's happening. Now look what the pasuk says. But by chalitza, and his yavama, his late brother's widow, shall approach him in the presence of the elders. What is that? It has to be done in front of the elders. Thereby indicating that at least 2 judges are required. There's a plural. We'll see where we get 3. And since you can't have an odd number, you're going to have 3. Right? What? Can't have an even number, right? So that's number 1. So that is chalitza requires a bezdin of 3. Meun, what's meun? Meun is something when a girl is married off at a young age without a father. Let's see the case here. The Torah grants the father of a minor girl the authority to marry her off. Now we know that. A father is entitled to decide his daughter who's a minor to get married. If this girl has no father, the rabbis granted such authority to her mother or brothers. But that's only rabbinic, not biblical. A father has the biblical right to marry off his little daughter. A mother and brothers, rabbinic. Since a marriage affected by her mother or brother is only rabbinic in nature, however, she has the right to subsequently refuse the marriage and thereby retroactively negate it as long as she has not yet come of age of being 12 years old. She can make a refusal. That is called meun. Meun means to refuse. This refusal must be done before a court of 3 judges, since the rabbis, whenever possible, model their ordinance after the presence of the Torah. Okay, there is some question as to which Torah law serves as a precedent for requiring that the refusal be performed in court. Some assume that the precedent is divorce law, because divorce has to be done in front of a bezdin of 3. And this isn't exactly a divorce, but it's sort of a divorce, because they're not going to be married anymore. This is always very difficult to understand, for a biblically recognized marriage is dissolved when the husband divorces his wife in the presence of 2 witnesses. He need not execute the divorce in court. Okay, Rav Shiv suggests that the procedure of refusal is modeled that after chalitza, because they share a common characteristic. Both are performed orally. There's no documentation. It's just a verbalization. Hence, a minor refusal, like the chalitza of Yavama, must be performed also for 3. Okay, so what it's based on. Next area of halacha. Neta rivoy umayser sheni she'ein dom of yeduim bishlosha. Okay, neta rivoy is the crops that you have for the first, rather, again, when you plant a new tree, for the first 3 years, you're not allowed to benefit from him at all. You can't use it at all. In year number 4, you must take the crops to Jerusalem and eat them there. What if you have a lot of crops and it's too much for you to carry? So what can you do? You can redeem it. You can redeem it for money, and you got to spend the money in Jerusalem. Similarly with Meiser Sheni. In a 7-year agricultural cycle, in years 1, 2, 4, and 5, you are required to take 10% of your crops and take them to Jerusalem and eat them in Jerusalem. That's the Meiser Sheni. That's called the second tithe. Again, if it's a lot of crops, you don't want to schlep it, you can redeem it. Okay, now the question is, you know, you're just going to redeem it on your own? Maybe you're going to cheat or something? So, and here's the question. What's more important, what if the value is unknown? Let's take a look. So now, if it's known, then there's no issue. I mean, normally we believe you. You look at the market says apples are $2 a pound. I got 50 pounds, okay, $100 plus 10%, whatever. Everyone can do those things on his own. But what if the guy doesn't know what it's worth? Why? Because he's the only guy who's selling Fuji melons. Place. I don't know. No one else makes this. There's no market, right? There's no one to do. So you need experts to analyze what they think the worth is. That's not something he can do. That's what he's saying. Look, there's no market for the fruit. Or let's say the fruit is rotten. His fugarat, no one's going to buy it, but it has to have some value. There's some questions to what the Mishnah means. According to the text appearing in the standard edition of the Gemara, which reads, She'ein dom of Yiduim, whose value is unknown, the Mishnah's qualification applies only to Maaser Sheni, but not the fourth year fruit. In other words, Maaser Sheni indeed requires appraisal only if its value is unknown, but not if its value is apparent. Fourth year fruit, on the other hand, requires appraisal whether its value is apparent or not. So there's a whole big machlokas over there. Okay, anyway, we'll talk more about it later. Now the three people here do not have to be rabbis, because since one is a rabbi, necessarily an expert in agriculture. So that's foot 22. That is, three people must appraise the fruit's value before it may be redeemed. We'll discuss who qualifies as an appraiser. So in other words, where does the question, we're not exactly sure what the redemptive value should be, it has to be brought in front of three people for that. Okay. Other areas where you have to evaluate, hekdoshos bishlosha. Let's say you want to redeem an item that was given to the Beis HaMikdash. So now, when you want to do that, and again, they have to be appraised by three people the same way. And here it doesn't matter if you know the value or not. You want to redeem it, you have to have three people. Why? The reason for this is that the sages were especially concerned that the treasury not lose money on a redemption. So to make sure there's no loss, you have to have three people to make sure we're extra careful in the Beis HaMikdash. We don't want to steal from Hashem, as it were. Okay, next thing that needs evaluation. Ha'erchin ha'metalchon b'shlosha. When you want to give the value of something, this is a different thing. When a person says, I don't want to give this item, but I want to give the value of this item to the Beis HaMikdash. That's called erchin. Erchin means, let's say the guy is grateful that he got something. Whatever, he's grateful. He says, "No, Hashem, if I get this car, I'll be. You know what? If you give me this car, I'm trying to bid on this car. If I get this car, I'll give the value of the car to the Beis HaMikdash."
He wants to keep the car.
But he wants to keep the car. I'm so happy I had a baby. You know, I'm going to give the value of the baby. Okay, you don't want to give it away to Hashem, but you want to recognize, I want to give a gift that is the same value of something else. So if you want to do that, again, Shlosha, you need three people to make the evaluation. But comes on Rehuda and he adds, Rehuda Omer, but in that case, Echad Mehen Kohen. One of them has to be a Kohen. Why? Because when we talk about this valuation, it mentions a Kohen as being part of the discussion. And Gemara is going to discuss how much of these past rulings is Rehuda arguing on. Is he only arguing on the last line or a couple lines before? The Gemara will deal with this. Okay, now that's when you evaluate movable objects. It was metaltaling, when you evaluate movable objects. But what about Bahakarkos? What if there's an appraisal of land that was consecrated? I made my land hektish, and now you want to redeem that. Now it has to be appraised by 10, and one of them's a Kohen, right? Evaluated by 10 people, one's a Kohen. So it means Tisha Vikohen, 9 and a Kohen. And we'll see the sources for all this. For Adam, Kiyetzim. And likewise, a person has to be appraised by 10. Okay? How's that? It would seem that the Mishnah refers to a consecrated person, and thus means, if a consecrated person wishes to redeem himself, he must first have 10 people appraise his value. More notes are that the Mishnah cannot possibly mean this, because it's impossible for a person to be consecrated. More is going to therefore learn the Mishnah differently. All right, we'll see what it means. But the simple reading just doesn't make any sense. Okay, now we've basically exhausted the lower courts of 3, 5, 7, 9, 10. So now we're going to bump it up to the next level. Dine nefashos, capital cases, the Esu Mishlosha has to have 23 judges. We will see the proof for that as well. And we'll discuss if there's exceptions to this rule as well. Now, there's other cases that will seem to be included in this sort of. Haroveya vahanirva, a beast that sodomizes a person, or a beast that is sodomized. In other words, depending who is the initiator here. So, is judged. Now, we're talking about the animal now. Because we have to kill the animal. Forget about the person. It's two separate cases here. So, the animal is in a case of 23 judges. Shenemar here, for some reason, the Mishnah decides to give you the source while we've been going all along without winding up a source, which is interesting. It says, V'harakta esa isha esa behema. You shall kill the woman and the animal. This verse speaks of a beast with which a woman has committed sodomy. Since the verse juxtaposes the woman and the beast, the Gemara concludes that the beast, like the woman, now clearly the woman, to kill a person, you have to have 23. That we'll see from other sources. So if the woman, and we put in the same clause, that's the hekesh we're comparing. It says you kill the woman and the beast, well then how are you going to kill the beast? So that's what I'm saying. She needs 23, so therefore, say that you need 23 for that as well. Oh, wait, but we're not finished with the proof of Omer, and it also says, Vesabahema taharogu, and also, and the animal you shall kill. And now this one discusses a beast that a man sodomized. So we see by a woman and a man, it says, and we compared a man to the woman, so not the beast to the woman, there. So now we have, that's just a beast with a woman. How about a beast with a man? So now we say the same thing, by a beast is also killed, it has to be killed the same way it was killed when it sodomized by a woman. It was compared to a woman with 23, it's compared to a man, same thing by a man with 23 as well. And this is a good place to stop, we're already going on half an hour. Okay, we are at least another day on this Mishnah. So this is all very general things.